All right, so welcome to the Amado Educados podcast. In this episode, a good friend of mine, Cristal Olivas, a singer, songwriter, artist, painter, all around badass, take no shit attitude. That's retarded. Let me try it again. That was fucking retarded. This episode, we are going to This episode is going to start with Cristal Olivas, singer-songwriter from here in San Jose, California, sharing a few of her songs, and I'm going to talk to her afterwards. Thank you for being on the podcast with us, Cristal.
Hi, what's up? I'm going to play two songs. One is an original called ¿Qué pasa? And another one is a cover called Lucha de Gigantes by Nachapo.
All right, let's check it out.
When you asked me if I'd wait, I ran so fast with my eyes on you, and I jumped in, forgetting my fears, forgetting I almost drowned in 93, forgetting that weight means don't run, forgetting that weight is what I've done. If you'd stay away from home, and you said you didn't know, me sentí sin ilusión, sin ilusión. ¿Qué pasó entre tú y yo? ¿Qué pasa entre tú y yo?
That was ¿Qué pasa? By the lovely and talented Cristal Olivas, a singer-songwriter, emerging artist from San Jose, California. What better way to follow this beautiful and tender song than with some ads, some desmadre ads, here to remind you to support us in any way you can by liking and sharing our content. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That's where we are most active, at desmadre.com, spelled out. This is the Mal Educados podcast, which is available on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and our YouTube page. Again, it's at desmadre.com. There's also the Desmadre podcast, which is available on all the same platforms. Please visit our Patreon page, desmadre.com/Patreon, to see how you can support the efforts here at desmadre.com directly. Because after all, it's just two assholes in a fucking garage, me and El Jefe Culero, trying to get this shit off the ground. We'd really appreciate the support. Remember to leave a 5-star review. All that jazz. Thank you very much. Here is my interview with the lovely Cristal. All right. I'll see you in just a second. All right. Ustedes no se me agüiten, por favor.
So I met Cristal like 2 years ago when I moved to San Jose. And yeah, I guess we've known each other for like 2 years at this point.
Yeah. Dude, how time flies.
It's true. Yeah.
It feels like not that long ago.
Yeah, it doesn't.
But at the same time, hella shit has happened.
For sure. It's cool to talk to here to Crystal because she's from here in San Jose. You were born here, right? You were born and raised here in San Jose, California.
Yeah, I was born here.
Where are your parents from?
My parents are from Mexico. My dad's from Sinaloa and my mom's from Michoacán.
And did they come here to San Jose when they came from Mexico?
My dad, since he lived closer to the border, like the very first time that he came to the States was to work, and I think he was like 16, and it was just to like work a season, and then he was like doing that for a couple of years, I think, and then when he was like 17 or 18, he like worked in a chicken coop in El Cajon, and then he moved to Huntington Beach and was like working, it was like all field work, working there, and then moved up to Redwood City, and then came down here because his sister was living here. And then my mom, she came here because she was she had a boyfriend that my grandpa didn't like, and she wanted to get married to him. And my grandpa had a cousin who was living here with his family, so he asked if he could like send my mom to live with them for a little bit because he was trying to get my mom to like not be with her boyfriend. Anyway, so yeah, so she was like heartbroken over here for the first time.
That was like sometime in the 80s or something?
No, this was in the 70s.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Cool. And then they settled here, obviously.
They met here. My mom was taking an English class and met my dad's sister. And then it was also like when I hear them talk about their stories, like it was like anyone that they met that was Mexican, like they became friends. Mm-hmm. Because it was...
I feel like that's still happening to some degree.
Yeah. Yeah. So... like naturally my mom met my dad's sister, they became friends, and then they, you know, like, and then my mom was actually the first woman in her town of San Simon to leave for the States.
Oh shit.
So then she brought like my parents kind of became like a hub of, you know, like,
really?
Of helping like a lot of my mom's family.
Holy
come
shit.
Over here.
That's
yeah.
That's cool. That's really cool. So yeah, just can you describe San Jose kind of before the tech boom? And how you saw it, and how like what it was like, you know, growing up here in San Jose, and you eventually went to UC Santa Cruz, right, for school, and then now you're here back in San Jose, and you know, I have a very sort of, I think, very limited view of San Jose, just because I've been here only 2 years, and I'm just now learning about all of sort of the super rich culture mm-hmm. that, you know, that it embodies and stuff. So what was like San Jose like in your view, like growing up? Well, like, was it a cool place as a kid to grow up? Or
yeah, so my memories of San Jose were like, I don't know, they like obviously really homely because it was my home, and I just felt like it was like a place where there was like always like a lot of sounds and things going on. And I mean, I would say like when I was growing up, the tech boom was already happening. So
right,
I can't really talk about like before the tech boom.
Right. And did your family have a lot of kind of friends, like Mexican people that you would hang out with? Or did you grow up with like the people that you went to church with? Or like,
yeah. So I would say like a lot of our friends were people that we went to church with for sure. And like family. And then my mom, she also was she's a seamstress, and so she did that for business for a long time. So yeah. Then there was all like that was also how we knew people, was like from her business. But yeah, and the church that I grew up in is mostly Mexican, like all Latino. So that was also like something that I appreciate too, is like I got to grow up with like experiencing, or you know, getting to know people like from different places that were not just Mexico. So I'm like grateful for that. It was, yeah.
For sure, yeah. I think you know, I always enjoy talking to people that are kind of my age about this, because I feel when I grew up, I felt it was like a lot more isolated in terms of like the kind of people that, for some reason, like my parents were both kind of like the black sheep in their family. Mm-hmm. And so they came to the United States for their own kind of separate reasons for, you know, coming here to the United States. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have like a big family that we that was in like but my dad is the only person from his family to come over here, and then my mom was one of two people who came over here. So and for whatever reason, like my parents also didn't have like friends that they made in Fort Worth, Texas, which is, you know, North Texas. So yeah, you know, I feel like my upbringing was a lot more isolated. And I'm like an only child, so, you know, I just watched a shitload of TV and, like, movies and shit. And but, you know, when I was at home, you know, I would only speak in Spanish. My parents are both, you know, fucking, they're immigrants, you know. I'm first generation Mexican or whatever the fuck you want to call it. So it's cool to come out here to San Jose and see. Don't get me wrong. I know there are very strong Mexican communities in North Texas. But it feels just like a lot more spread out and isolated and really fucking like suburban and shit. And there are pockets of like Mexican communities. But here it just feels like a lot more kind of out in the open, and people are kind of like, you see like a lot more people, like Mexican people driving around and shit, fucking driving their chistrocas perronas, as you heard. So yeah, that's cool. So now that we got a little bit of background on San Jose and Silicon Valley and you growing up here, we can talk about kind of how that kind of influences your music making and your songwriting, which, you know, I really love music myself. And you know, I think from the first time I heard you, it just sounded really like good and unique. And so how does that play into what you're... What, so you played ¿Qué Pasa, right? What is... that song about exactly? I didn't I was listening, but I didn't catch the theme. I'm not smart enough to catch it on the first
theme. Well, I would say for sure a big theme of my music has to do with love things, and sometimes, and even like saying it right now, it's like it's hard to, I feel like it's pretty obvious, but it's hard to say out loud because I'm still
you
like
just express yourself through your art.
I do, I really do. And sometimes I feel kind of like embarrassed. I'm like, dang, I should like, you know, like I should be writing about stuff that matters or something. But you know what? Whatever. Like, I can't help it. It just comes. Anyway, so yeah, that song was also one about love and pain, and so I would say that my songwriting is definitely like, it has come to be more than anything like some kind of like channel for like self healing and therapy. And I like, yeah, that song is pretty like fresh and tender, and I was definitely like feeling a lot of shit, and it just like came, it just like
right happened. Right,
so
was there a lyric about you almost drowning or something
in 93?
Is that, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. I was at my uncle's apartment complex in 93, and we were swimming. It was me, my older sister, and my cousin, and I fell into the deep end.
Shit.
And I remember, like, you know, like panicking and stuff, and I also remember, like, there was like a moment, I guess I was just falling. I was there for a while, I don't know, because things started getting really slow. I wasn't really scared anymore. It was like more calm. And then my sister pulled me out.
Holy
and
shit.
I was, yeah. And I remember she told me to like promise not to tell anyone because my parents were going to be really pissed at her.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm
so
sorry.
You didn't tell people or your parents?
I mean, I didn't tell my parents. Uh-huh. Like I would tell friends like as the years went on.
Right.
But yeah, so now like I know how to swim, but I can't jump into water. Huh. Even if it's like hella shallow, I can't jump into it.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
One thing I did notice that I can talk on and that I do want to speak to you about is that you were kind of switching between English and Spanish, and it was, you know, seemingly a fluid sort of conversation, you know, that you, or not conversation, but the song itself feels cohesive. And so, yeah, maybe talk a little bit about that, or when do you... It's not. I'm assuming it's not something that you do, like, deliberately, or that it's more natural, and what if whatever feels right, as opposed to being like, in this lyric, I'm going to sing it in Spanish, you know?
Switch
like,
it back and forth. To, yeah,
hold on,
to,
wait a second. Just wait for that.
Yeah, I think it has to do with like a few different things, but I guess it all comes down to is that I like growing up here and growing up like bilingual and in like a very Mexican household, like it feels like there's like different parts of me that are like existing, but all at the same time, and they all like come up, you know. And like I grew up listening mostly to music in Spanish, and I didn't really like start like too much like pursuing like English music until I was a lot older. But yeah, there's just like, so I feel like that's also, that's one part of it is I've had a lot of training in like music in Spanish. So, and there's also like in my like journaling and my diaries and like, a lot of like what I write, just like little lines or poetry or whatever, like comes out in Spanish. My mom and her dad son muy dicharacheros.
What the fuck is so, that? I don't like, think I know what that is.
Like, dicen muchos dichos.
Oh, you know, right, right, okay. Have, like, tight, yeah.
And, like, for everything, you know? Uh-huh. And sometimes, like I don't even, it kind of goes over my head, and I'm like, oh, that's what they were trying to say.
Yeah.
So I feel like
what are some of your favorite ones?
Some of my favorite dichos. I think my favorite one is el que mucho abarca, poco aprieta. So,
I guess like, over my head.
Like if you, it's like about being overzealous, you know, and like trying to do too much, and you can't.
What is it again?
El que mucho abarca, poco aprieta.
Okay.
My
least favorite Mexican dicho is el que no tranza no avanza.
Oh,
for some reason,
yeah.
Like, it just basically means that you have to be a fucking asshole to get ahead in life, which is kind of whack.
Like
people say it and they say it with pride. I'm just like, man, fuck that phrase.
Yeah, it is shady.
When did you start playing music and when did you start writing songs?
Okay, all right. So I started playing music very, very early in my life. Like, there was always music on, always. And then also with, like, going to church, you know, there's, like... Mm-hmm. So, and then my older brother and sister and my dad, they all play guitar to like different extents. My sister, she's really, really good.
Nice.
And
does she live here in San Jose?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my little brother is the only one that lives out of San Jose, Missoula, Montana.
Yeah.
But so she would. I learned a lot of guitar from them, from my sister especially, but I didn't really pick it up for myself until I was like maybe 17 or 18. And then I started trying to write songs like seriously when me and my ex were trying to like start a band. This is when I was living in Santa Cruz. And so I started writing very like Jesus and Mary Chain inspired songs.
Nice.
And but I would like le ponía tanto esfuerzo because I would think about it so much because I felt like I had this like block. And then to be honest, just like how I was saying earlier about like music as like healing, it wasn't until I experienced, I would say, like my very first very, very difficult breakup. And the beginning of 2013, I started like writing hella songs because I was so sad. And so I would like get really, really stoned and just play, and stuff would come out of me. And I was like, you know, it would help me. So
nice. At least it wasn't like heroin or something that you turned to.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Crack cocaine, just simple weed.
I don't do
maybe
drugs.
A little bit of booze and just heartache.
Yeah, that, basically. And I think I was eating a lot of goat cheese at that time.
Is that for like some sort of remedy, some Mexican remedy that I'm not familiar with?
So that's when I would say like 2013 is like this kind of like music career, whatever. I don't know what to call it. But this wave is like when that started. And then it got to a place where I was like, oh, shit, you know what? Like, I'm not really that sad anymore. And, like, you know, like, I feel a lot better. And I was like, damn, do I have to, like, is it over? Because is, like, my relationship to, like, music writing over because I don't feel as sad anymore? But no, that wasn't true. And I pushed myself to start writing more about, like, just myself or memories and family. and realizing that there's like...
Pause for the big-ass truck that just rode by. All right, keep going.
There's a lot of... I think a lot of healing that needs to happen constantly for myself, and I would say for sure for like most people in my life, for my family, and
like immigrant communities.
Yeah, just for and there's like a sense of like longing for like a lot of different kinds of, I don't know, just like fulfillment. So realizing that like I didn't. Even though I wasn't like heartbroken, there is constantly still a lot of things that are unsettled. And I think that just similar to like writing, like music has been really helpful for me, and like has helped me feel like strong in myself. So that's like my songwriting kind of
process, background.
I currently play in a band called Valley Girls with good friends of mine, uh-huh. Mander and Kiana.
And shout out to them.
Yeah.
And so those are the two sort of musical projects that you are sort of invested in and spend time on, with whether it's your solo songwriting. And some of the songs that you've played on acoustic are songs that you play with Valley Girls too, right? That you converted to.
Yeah. So before I started playing with Valley Girls, I was just trying to play music, and I wanted to start a band for like a good while, and it just was not happening. So I was like, you know what, fuck it. Like, I'm gonna play solo sets and who cares? So I played them like acoustically, I played them like on electric. They kind of sounded different, you know, like they kind of go through like different forms. And then when I got together with Mander and Kiana, they were like, well, we really like your songs, let's play some of your songs. So I was like, all right. And that was cool because they were songs that I wanted to play with like drum and bass.
Sure.
I feel like I'm like constantly like coming up with songs, and something that I have been like, I guess, paying more tribute to is like, there's like these like songs that I've been writing that like are very like country-esque. But more than anything, like, I didn't grow up listening to country. Like, I grew up listening to rancheras, and that's why they sound like that. And I think like a few years ago, coming to the like seeing how much like Americana or whatever, you know, or like country here in the States is like the music is like so similar to rancheras, and and so then I was like, oh dang, so then that makes sense that like I don't know what this song is, this like old ass country song, but I fucking like it, you know. And I would say like rancheras, corridos, and like cumbia de conjunto are like some of my like very very favorite music from when I was growing up. So yeah, just like I fucking love tundata, 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 and like have been like using that more for my own songs. So,
You're good? It's really cool to, like I've been saying, to see other people that are our age roughly, that are in their, you know, mid to late 20s and even younger, like really kind of coming into themselves and, as you were saying, taking up spaces. And we're in a interesting part of the world and part of the country in that, you know, Silicon Valley, there's obviously like this huge tech boom that keeps growing and growing at a really, it's almost like terrifying pace, you know. It's really pushing a shitload of people out to make room for their asses. And so it's I think the answer lies in, you know, like getting people that are part of this community and other communities to really start getting into politics, you know, and really basically being a voice. Because, you know, not even trying to get into the fucking bullshit that's going on right now like politically, but it's really cool, and I'm very optimistic for not just our community but other marginalized communities coming together and really sort of like more or less kind of like, I feel like the Trump presidency in a lot of ways has checked people and been like, you may have thought that the last 8 years with a black president that we're making progress, but all of it just got fucking turned on its motherfucking back, you know. And now we're all kind of seeing the really, what I would argue is a very ugly side of like America and you know, like the racism, homophobia, misogyny, all that shit is kind of, it's kind of crazy that the president himself said a lot of crazy shit and he's still the president. And so, yeah, I guess my point is that it's really cool to see people like you here in San Jose and the scene that's developing. And so I'm optimistic, you know, I'm not like trying to say that everything's going to hell or anything. I think if anything, it's really cool to see people kind of like really kind of coming into themselves. So
I think I get like really overwhelmed in thinking about the world and then feeling like I'm like, fuck, like why should I do anything? Because like if I'm not doing anything to like change anything, then why should I do anything at all? And but the problem with that is that like I think a big part of like fascism and like the state that we are in is that it like it's like very actively trying to like rob us of our like humanness and our existence. So I feel like more than anything I feel like I choose to be like very intentional about like how I spend my energy and with who, and like because I want to like uplift and support like people around me that I love that like are similar to me or somehow like our struggles are intertwined. And so if that means that like, you know, like I don't know, even like this podcast, like making this podcast, like it's so important, you know, because
I agree,
because you know, like I don't know what the fuck is gonna happen, but like this podcast is gonna exist even after we're gone, I think.
Yeah.
In hopes.
Yeah. Unless they fucking, yeah, like, fucking, like, delete all of the internet somehow. But yeah, I think that's a good note to end on. Where can people, I don't think we got to this. Okay. Yeah, where can people follow Cristal, the singer-songwriter, and buy tapes for Valley Girls? Where can they follow that shit?
My solo stuff, I don't have, like, I have a SoundCloud that I casually upload like recordings of myself in my bedroom or like in my living room, and it's SoundCloud.com/ Cristal Cristal hyphen Olivas Olivas, and you can find Valley Girls at valleygirls.bandcamp, and Valley Girls is Valley, and then Girls is 2 R's no I. .bandcamp. You can download our demo for free. You can also purchase a tape through there. You can purchase a shirt. And we are going to be playing our next show on May 27th at Trash House. And if you are interested...
Is that in San Jose?
Yeah, it's here in San Jose.
See how much I fucking don't know.
And if you are interested, listen to this podcast. Hit up Sammy. Get in contact, and we will send you the address so that you can come. It's going to be a really good show.
Cool. Thanks for talking to... I think... Is this... There's a little frog that just came off.
Oh yeah, my frogs.
Your earring frog just fell off into your hair, so I think...
I'm trying to get away. All right. I'm trying to hop away.
Cool. Well, all right, well, thanks for talking to me here, Crystal, Cristal, and we will talk to y'all.
Thank you for inviting me, Sammy.
Of course. We'll see y'all next time. Fuck out of here. All right, so we're going to round off this episode talking here in the motherfucking Desmadre studio. We're actually about to get kicked out. Yeah, I think we've mentioned that already.
Empieza el conteo.
Yeah. You know, earlier, just a second ago, you were kind of making jokes about Cinco de Mayo and shit. And
sorry, I had to.
It's like important for bochos like me that we have a day to celebrate our heritage and our culture. Whether it's, you know, through peeling out with fucking lowriders and... having very large flags hanging from our cars, cabrón.
So,
respect. That's all I'm saying, cabrón.
Todo para seguir contaminando el planeta porque le hace falta contaminación al planeta.
All right. Luis is pissing me off, all right? He doesn't understand the importance of Cinco de Mayo. Like us pochos, if you're watching. Solidarity, cabrones. What the fuck am I talking about?
Cinco de mayo. ¿Qué hiciste el cinco de mayo?
I just get emotional.
¿Tú qué hiciste ya que te pones tan emocional?
All right, I was hoping you would ask me what I did.
Yeah. Right? ¿Tú qué hiciste?
So, what I did on cinco de mayo. We actually went and shot a Man on the Street, a Juan Yerba's Man on the Street thing on Story and King.
Oh,
and so there was a Story and King, I guess you can explain this better.
Okay, Story and King.
That's here in San Jose.
En San Jose es como el corazón de los latinos, es donde todos los latinos se juntan. Bueno, los mexicanos para ser exactos.
Yeah, yeah.
Y como
y hay como establecimientos, right? There's like a bunch of like restaurants and like stores,
tiendas.
And shit, tiendas, and there's like a but there's like it's largely Mexican
community.
Is that the east side of San Jose? Is that considered
yes.
the east side?
Yes.
I'm learning shit every day, dude. Yes. Así contigo, cabrón.
Así que estuvo chido que no te saltaran, güey.
Yeah, seriously. So we went out and basically there's a bunch of people that get in their like cars, their custom cars, mm-hmm. and they kind of basically line up. It was kind of funny to see all this shit. It was literally at a fucking Target parking lot.
Pero mejor que lo ven ya cuando lo saques.
Yeah, yeah. So you'll, if you follow this madre, it'll come out probably like on Thursday or Friday. So that's what I did. I didn't do much, honestly. Afterwards, we just kind of went and we asked people. We were basically asking people like, oh, like, why do you celebrate Cinco de Mayo? And what does it mean to be Mexican-American? And da-da-da. We talked to probably like a good like 10 or 11 people. And it was really cool, actually, to see them that they're just out there with their family and they were drinking and shit and then playing music and stuff. So it's always fucking interesting to me, fucking Cinco de Mayo is because the actual day is just some random ass fucking batalla, right, in Puebla. It's kind of random. It's, to my understanding, and if anybody listening is fucking well versed in Mexican history, please comment and fucking check our asses. But
please,
it's
please do.
From my understanding, it's like a relatively insignificant battle in Mexican history. There's like the
pues
French.
Ni tanto. Sí tuvo mucho peso, pero no es así. Es que México ha tenido demasiadas batallas con
Los europeos. I mean, yeah, maybe
nos peleamos por pasteles.
Yeah, actually, you probably know more about this shit.
No, yo no ponía atención en la escuela. Yo no sé más que tú.
No, I mean, what's interesting to me is that that period, Mexico's like Mexican history is known for having like a shitload of, you know, economic turmoil, right?
And la culpa la tuvo Porfirio Díaz.
Yeah, so that's what's interesting about Cinco de Mayo is because all that shit happened basically like 10 or 15 years before the Porfiriato, like the he was like president for what, like 60 years or some shit, like
algo lo que lleva el PRI más o menos.
Yeah. So
se la lleva, no era un volado.
So all this crazy shit is happening in the 19th century, and then the little that I know about Porfirio Diaz, you know, he was like this kind of, if you can call him a dictator, but he was like a he started the PRI, but we're not going to get into those.
No, él no empezó el PRI. Pero dio las bases para que se hiciera el PRI. Uh-huh. Metió ferrocarriles de México, que después llegó a vender Salinas. Y hizo dos, tres cosas más o menos, pero pues sí, se pasaba de lanza.
But all that shit is not really talked about in the current form of Cinco de Mayo. When I think of Cinco de Mayo, I think of like white dudes at beaches getting really fucking drunk, wearing sombreros and fucking mustaches.
A little spring
people,
break.
Mexican people will get
break
like,
for one day.
Mexican people get like angry at that shit. I just think it's kind of funny, you know. It's like, I mean, they're not offending my motherfucking culture, you know. Like they can fucking suck a dick and die, as far as I'm concerned. But you know, like when it's been commercialized, like a lot of shit here in America, and yeah, it's kind of funny to me. I'm not sure how you feel about it since Mexicanos.
Como mexicano, es así de no me importa, pero si lo celebran, qué chido.
Yeah.
Porque en México lo único que haces es honores a la bandera y ya. Ya te paras, saludas a la bandera. Es que qué chido.
In Mexico? On Cinco de Mayo.
Sí, pues,
cuando it's vas just a, like a random battle that we won, that they won.
Yeah.
But yeah, I need to read into that some more because I feel like it's a really important part of Mexican history. It was like when Benito Juárez was the president.
Juan Benito Juárez.
And then it was like I was saying, right before the Porfiriato, and you know, that kind of changed shit kind of crazy. And what's funny too that I was reading is that they stopped the French on like I think it was 1862 and the Batalla de Puebla or whatever, but then Napoleon III got fucking pissed off and then came back the next year and actually overthrew the fucking Mexican government and he put like an Austrian, or I think it was Austrian, Maximilian the First, as like the interim president of Mexico for like 3 years, and then they finally fucking
they
killed
him
that fool. Yeah. Benito Juarez came back, and then 10 years later, Porfirio Diaz started his shit. So that's something I actually want to read into a little bit more.
A little bit.
But dude, it's funny that the way that it's celebrated here in America is just like, it's just like literally just characterizations, like fucking mammy shit, Mexican style of like, you know, people wearing sombreros and drinking tequila and getting like really fucking drunk. Even at a fucking Whole Foods. I thought Whole Foods had a little bit more class, you know? But like I showed up and there was literally like a shitty piñata hanging out outside. Those like those really shitty like party time decorations, you know, that you can buy. Oh, and one of the fucking employees was wearing a goddamn poncho, dude. Like he was like checking people out, like, "Oh, buenos días, señor," you know. And he was just like had a fucking poncho on.
De las palabras que te aprendiste en español en la clase de high school.
Yeah. Dude, I was like, man, I expect this from Walmart, but not Whole Foods. All right, Whole Foods.
Es una corporación.
We're actually eating trail mix from Whole Foods right now.
Whole Foods es una corporación. ¿Qué esperabas?
Yeah, seriously. This is kind of slightly off topic, but my mom actually came to visit me here in the Bay Area last weekend.
So where did you go?
We basically went to like San Francisco and what the fuck else did we do? We hung out here in San Jose. We went to San Francisco for like 2 nights. And then we went to Gilroy, the Gilroy outlet. My mom's sister came from Mexico. My tia, she lives in Cuernavaca, and she came with my mom out here. So,
nice.
I was reminded that like when you talk to people from Mexico, like their view of Mexico is a lot different from how Chicanos talk about it.
No, it depends on where they live from, like where they are from.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's not gonna be the same if you ask someone from Nesa that if you ask someone
Morelos,
from Polanco or Morelos. Like,
right. No, my point is that like this kind of the way that I've seen, you know, like Chicanos kind of romanticize like Mexico and Mexican culture is a lot different from the people that actually live in there. Mexico.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
They're a lot more like cynical. Mm-hmm. They're a lot more like, I get the sense that when I talk to people from Mexico, that they're just, ya están fastidiados, right? They're just fucking pissed off that there's so much corruption and they're powerless, da 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 da. And that's just something that I don't think is as present in the conversation here with Chicanos. So
exactly,
and it being fucking Cinco de Mayo is just kind of interesting too, because it is seemingly like the one day out of the year here in America where Mexican people, specifically Mexican people, are allowed to sort of celebrate their heritage and their culture. And you know, it's a really fucking complicated because Mexico está, you know.
Está la verga. Sí. Pues es que la neta hay un chingo de corrupción. Está Duarte, el otro Duarte, el desmadre de las casas de Peña, está implicado lo de los 43. Es que ya es demasiado enojo de parte de todos, no nada más son unos, ya.
So yeah, I mean, so
puede llegar a Venezuela, güey.
Yeah, so exactly, yeah. So my aunt, you know, when I would hear her talk about Mexico, like, you know, she's very proud. My mom's side of the family is from Guerrero, Mexico. And, you know.
Chilpancingo, right?
Yeah, close to there.
Chilpancingo.
I have family that lives in Chilpancingo and then are technically like my mom and her siblings and stuff grew up in this town called Zumpango. So, yeah, I guess my point is that when, you know, I hear my aunt talk about it and other people that live in Mexico from Mexico, they're not as like, they don't romanticize Mexican culture as much as I feel like other people here in the United States, you know, myself included, a lot of the time, of like, oh, you know, we come from Aztecs and you know, we have like all this. It's like that movie, The Stand and Deliver. It's like, it's in your blood, you know, like you can do math. It's like, it's calculus, it's in your blood. So it's those kind of movies that kind of fuck up the overall perception. Now, I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. But
I think you got a point, dude. Like, trying to look into that difference and how to explain it to, like, activists. Because, I mean, in Mexico, there's not really, like, that's what one of the things that I see. There's, like, a lot of movements over there, pero al mismo tiempo desaparecen a muchos activistas.
Yeah, yeah.
Y eso aquí no lo hacen, güey. Yeah. Y eso es lo que, eso, es por eso por lo que a mí me da como que un chingo de, no sé, ver todo eso de las dos maneras. Mm-hmm. De la manera de que en México las cosas, las personas que quieren hacer las cosas bien, terminan muertas y la gente ni se entera y no pueden hacer nada.
Yeah, yeah. That sucks, man. Yeah, my cousin has talked about this. Jesus has talked about how the level of corruption in places like Mexico, like run from the government to just everyday people, you know, like people that are like that have their own stores and stuff, and they're like, I've talked about this before, but like one of my least favorite dichos in Mexican culture is el que no tranza no avanza.
No es en toda la cultura, güey, nada más en el DF.
El que no tranza no avanza. Well, I mean that sort of mentality though, of like tienes que ser un ojete para
salir adelante porque si no te come el de arriba.
Yeah, yeah, that's just like an unfortunate fucking like philosophy that I feel.
Pero es que eso te ayuda a vivir ahí en México.
Exactly. So that allows for people to basically be corrupt assholes to the people that they're living around. You know, it's like.
¿Para qué te digo que no? Sí, sí.
Yeah, exactly.
No fucking sé.
Man. All right, anyways.
Cambiamos de tema porque nos vamos a poner a chillar.
So yesterday you went to a fucking Panteón Rococo concert.
Hell yeah.
Aquí en San José, right?
En los terrenos de
Tell these all these fucking knucklehead pochos who Panteón Rococo is in case they don't know.
Pero es que ya es una banda viejita, en fin. Yeah, el Panteón Rococo ya tiene años tocando y vinieron.
¿Son del DF?
Son del DF, los chavos. Son chilangos, chilango power.
Ajá.
Y tocaron anoche, y como pueden escuchar no tengo buena voz porque pues
me It's la like your Spice Girls, you were just like, ¡ah!
No, ándale, algo así. No, güey, es como para que nos entiendan los millennials, como los pinches, ¿cómo se llaman? Los One Direction.
Güey. Yeah, it was pretty much, yeah, One Direction.
One Direction. Porque ya estás viejito, güey.
Yeah, seriously.
Anoche me di cuenta de eso, de que ya cuento como chavorruco, güey, entrando a chavorruco, ya. Mm-hmm. Sí, ya.
But yeah, how was it? Like,
okay, es que a mí soy biased, güey. A mí me late un chingo.
Luis is a rockero through and through. I mean, you'll live and die by
by my rules of rock.
Yeah, but I talk about this more like who Panteón Rococo.
Okay, Panteón Rococo.
Claudia, my girlfriend, didn't know who the fuck they were.
Tocan norteño y son de ¿cómo se llama? Gran Valley. No, porque si para que les ponga atención y los busquen, porque si no los busca.
Yeah, yeah.
No,
Panteón Rococo. I thought they were like a kind of like a ska band.
Well, they
like,
are. They're a ska band. They play since I want to say 1995. Question mark, porque no me acuerdo. Estoy borracho y drogado. Es una de las primeras bandas que empezó a salir del underground del ska mexicano.
Uh-huh. Y que empezó maybe we can talk about that very briefly, about how ska is like really fucking popular in Mexico.
Oh, hell yeah.
Why do you think that is? I don't ever...
Porque también le tiran mierda a la política.
Yeah, it's very political.
Es muy político hacia la izquierda, más que nada.
Right.
Y... es que toda la música que está alrededor de Panteón Rococó, todas las bandas de ska, crecieron con una represión que ha sido el PRI. Y ellos saben qué es eso. Por eso es una de las cosas. Ellos, Molotov, aunque Molotov son fresas ya, pero dejemos eso aparte. Tuvieron un pinche auge bien chido cuando yo estaba creciendo, los Rococó, y pues verlos acá es así de bien chido.
Yeah.
Y tienen varios discos. Tienen como dos discos en vivo y... No me preguntes cosas inteligentes cuando ando en este estado. Pero ya, anoche fue el toquín y me topé a varios amigos que tenía rato que no veía. Omar, uno de ellos. Y me encontré a varias personas que también se portaron chido hace un rato.
Nice.
De las bandas que tocaron estuvieron Panteón Rococó, estuvo Rascahuele de Los Ángeles, Antidoping del DF... Y abrí una banda de aquí de San José que ya llegué tarde para verlos porque estaba esperando a alguien y me estaba fumando un toque con otra persona.
So yeah, this was a very, as you could probably tell, a very fucking Mexican event.
Salí con bruces, ma.
Yeah. Is this like a thing where like there's like a no pocho zone, like no pochos allowed?
I mean, es que pretty much. Si no hablas español te pierdes en el slam y ya no te vuelven a encontrar y apareces en otro planeta, güey. Suele pasar.
I should play some of that. I'll add it a little bit. Yeah. The only song I know is like the most popular one. La Carranza, is that what it's called?
La Carencia, güey. No, La Carranza.
Oh my God. I'm going to take this part out, dude.
Pocho, no. Deja, leave it. I want
what
proof.
What the fuck is it called?
La Carencia.
Carencia. That's the only one I know.
La Carranza.
Fucking dumbass. All right. Why are fucking Mexican people still obsessed with ska, dude?
Well, it's not just the ska. You have to understand.
No,
the,
no te enojes. Estamos tratando de tener una conversación.
En México,
I'm just trying to ask. You know,
te voy a voltear una pinche cachetada con mi pito. Ya suena más verga en español, güey. Suena más verga en español, güey. Es que en México, güey, al menos en el DF, que es de donde yo vengo,
right,
hay un chingo de subculturas bien cabronas, porque allá no nada más eran los emo, güey, sino allá hay unos tarquetos, hay punks, hay cholos, hay de todo. Y hay un lugar, güey, que es bien famoso, que se llama el... Ahorita ya lo hicieron hasta museo, hay un museo ahí, pero en sí es el Tianguis del Chopo, y ahí van todas las bandas que de verdad quieren tocar, van a tocar ahí, güey.
Ya.
Yeah. Ahí me tocó ir así una vez a que me asaltaran, pero antes de que me asaltaran compré dos cassettes, uno de Secta Core.
Hold on a second. We're like in the... Hold on a second.
En el garage. Like, todavía estamos en el garage, gracias a Dios.
We're in like the worst position like recording this because we're basically... We're in a garage for anybody listening on audio. And we're at the one end of the garage where the actual
door... Hubiéramos dicho de aquel lado.
Yeah, exactly. We're on the side of... like the microphones are facing the actual garage door. So anytime a car drives by, it's really fucking loud, and people with their loud-ass mufflers. And so all that to say, this is just a humble production that we're just trying to transmit
no
to
es cierto,
you all.
Son, son nuestros efectos especiales. Yeah. Pagamos por esos
efectos. It's all green
especiales.
Screen, actually. This shitty
eso
background
no existe,
here.
Eso no existe. No, we're actually like, que se cae, güey.
Yeah. We're actually like in a fucking really nice office in Mountain View, California.
Palo Alto. Estamos Palo en Palo Alto.
Yeah. Next to a fucking... but yeah, okay, so Mexican people love yeah. ska because there's a lot of, you know, different underground groups, and mm-hmm. you're talking specifically, I guess, about el DF and shit, and
yeah,
and it's just, yeah, you know.
Pero hay un chingo de bandas por todo México, no nada más en el DF.
Yeah.
Hay demasiadas bandas en Guadalajara, Monterrey, en Yucatán también hay unas. Es cuestión de buscarle.
Yeah.
Porque hay muchas bandas bien buenas, la verdad, que valen cool. la pena.
Yeah, dude, hit me up next time. I'd be down to go to that.
¿Quieres dejar de ser pocho?
Yeah, a little bit.
Ok, vamos para el siguiente concierto de La Molocha. Creo que ese es como tu... Ese debe de ser, para alguien que no sabe música, ese es como el primer concierto de rock mexicano al que tienes que ir, güey. Ya, si te atreves ya así a ir un poquito más, güey, sería como ir a ver al Tri, güey, pero ya es...
Yeah. ¿Es that fool still alive?
Güey, no mames, es como Ozzy Osbourne, güey.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, dude, el Tri is the Mexican Ozzy Osbourne. That's a really good comparison. That's super true, yeah.
Me van a madrear, güey, ahora que me vuelvan a ver en el siguiente
toque. Yeah, right. But did he do as many drugs? El Tri también era...
No, güey, no mames. No, güey, ese güey era santo, güey. Iba a misa, güey, y tomaba agua bendita y decían que hasta sudaba sangre, güey.
That's hilarious. Anyways, so did you hear about the fight, dude? The fucking... You were fucking at some Mexican ska
well,
shit.
Fighting for my life in the middle of the slam,
nah,
dude.
You should have been watching the fucking Canelo versus Chavez fight.
¿Tú la viste?
Dude. Hell fucking no, I didn't.
Entonces, si tú no la viste, ¿por qué quieres que yo me vea
You're
en esa posición?
You're supposed to report on it. I told you last night to watch it so you can talk about it today on the podcast.
Ah, es que, güey, estaba tan pinche al lado del lugar, güey, que pues, así de... con tal de colgarte así de... Sí, güey, sí, mañana grabamos, güey, ya, güey.
Son of a bitch.
No pensé que era grabar y no ver la pelea.
So, Canelo won the fight last night against Chavez Jr.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, yeah. I think, but is it really a spoiler? Because everybody that I... talked to and everything that I saw online was that this fool Canelo was gonna win and he fucking won. So what the fuck is the point of having a fight like that where and then other people, I don't know if you saw, but after the fight he basically was like, oh, Triple G, you're next.
Mm-hmm.
And they played like some like trailer with Triple G in it, so it looked just really kind of like
fake
and
already made.
People were making like
oh, yeah,
WWE jokes. It's like, you're next, you know, like, so
ya no hay respeto.
I don't know shit about boxing, really, and I know that it's kind of a very shady industry, and that, you know, when Mexicans are involved...
o sea que la corrupción está en todos lados.
Yeah.
Ese también es un dicho bien acá, güey. La corrupción somos todos, güey.
Is that one? Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I didn't even
yeah, you're not a Mexican, bro.
I'm not.
You're pocho. Sorry. sorry to tell you the truth.
¿Por qué?
Pa!
I mean, what's interesting to me is that Chavez Jr. is obviously the son of like a fucking
legend.
Super legend. Yeah, yeah. Super leyenda. Sí. Mexico, who was like an amazing fighter.
Hell yeah.
And did you watch like Chavez fights when you were younger?
Sí, de la última que me acuerdo es cuando le pegó de la olla, güey.
Yeah.
Cuando de la olla.
That was like at the end of his career.
Pero pues
like,
ya estaba viejito, yeah, wey, yeah, lo exactly. agarró en bastón, güey.
That guy's fucking a fucking monster, man.
Rifa el Púas Olivares.
Hell yeah. So I wonder it was crazy because I guess he's his son's coach, right? Or he's on his team.
He's on his team, but the coach is another guy. But yeah.
And so it's crazy to see Julio Cesar Chavez, the dad, mm-hmm. in the corner, and he's just like really hyped and stuff, and he's kind of coaching his son. It's just like this really weird kind of scene, you know, of like this legendary fucking Mexican fighter. Julio Cesar Chavez.
Y su hijo no puede.
Su hijo, like, basically, like, hijo de papi, like.
Junior, güey.
Junior, literally. I think you can probably explain this better, but Junior in Mexico
is alguien que su papá tiene dinero y ese güey no tiene que trabajar.
It's like, it's basically like yuppie in English.
Oh,
like,
really?
If you're a yuppie, yeah, you're like kind of like this, like, rich kid who's kind of like. You know, soft and shit. But and it's just funny because this guy, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. is actually like named Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. Anyways, so that's kind of crazy to see fucking legendary boxer like that.
Pero,
sabes, my question is like, why would Julio Cesar Chavez want his son to be a boxer as well when
sus dos hijos son boxeadores.
Yeah.
El otro acaba de peleó la semana pasada y ganó, ganó un cuate por un knockout en el cuarto round,
güey. Oh, shit.
So, es así de, al principio, según los preparan bien, cabrón, porque también Chávez Jr. venía peleando según bien.
Ajá.
No sé a cuántos había noqueado y todo ese rollo, pero venía peleando bien.
Ya.
Yeah. Y en México hicieron así como que la batalla de los hijos de México, que a ver quién se gana el corazón de la patria. Así
yeah.
de, chale.
Yeah, you know, it's, the reason I say is like why he would want to have his son be in boxing is because boxing is one of those sports. Well, yeah, that, but money, of course. But the, I feel like the best fighters are the ones who came from nothing. You know, like uh-huh. Chavez is like from the fucking rancho mm-hmm. in Sinaloa or some mm-hmm. shit. So he came up like really poor, and so you know they have like this really crazy hunger and mm-hmm. then fight and shit.
I think so it's someone, that dude. It's just the hunger.
That and I mean, I guess the argument would be I don't know much like Floyd Mayweather Jr. I think his dad was a boxer.
Yeah, his dad was.
He didn't necessarily come from like la derrota or anything, but
ese güey es como el junior este.
But he's actually really good.
Plateado,
he's really good. He's kind of a fucking cock.
He's,
and a
yeah,
bastard,
he's an asshole.
But,
he's an asshole.
But he is a good fighter, and
I don't like him because he hangs out with Justin Bieber.
Yeah, and fucking a bunch of other questionable 50 people.
Cents.
Yeah. 50
centavos. In Mexico, ¿cuántos?
Yeah, but I think Floyd Mayweather is like from the next generation of boxers, mm-hmm. and who's like a lot flashier and shit. And Julio Cesar Chavez was just like a fucking like, you know, like a fucking just perro. You know, like
yeah.
he was like just the real deal, and he had a mm-hmm. lot of like raw talent and like a lot of ambition, and he was an amazing fighter. You know, mm-hmm. and he'll be remembered as that. And so I would fucking hate to be that fool's son. I'd be like, papá, no quiero pelear.
Ándale.
Quiero hacer diseño gráfico.
Quiero hacer diseño gráfico.
Dude, mama. Yeah. If I was Julio Cesar Chavez's
quiero,
son, I'd be like.
Quiero editar para desmadre.
Yeah, exactly.
Ay, no mami.
Fucking A. So that fool
pobrecito,
lost.
Lo madrearon, güey.
Yeah.
Mames.
I guess, yeah, he won by unanimous decision. So he didn't.
No, pero aparte le pusieron una madriza y luego le dieron el gane al pinche.
Yeah. He should have just fell.
Yeah,
like
he should just won
if
by
was, yeah, if that was me, like in the 10th round, I'd be like, man, I'm about to lose. I'm just going to fucking fall.
Pero tu papá está enfrente, o sea, cuando te bajes, tu papá te va a dar otra putiza, güey.
Yeah, true. Dude, I can't imagine. We should make a skit of like what happened in the locker room afterwards with Julio Cesar Chavez and his son.
Se baja su padre, se baja.
Dude.
Luego putazo así.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, why would Junior put himself in that position? Because like, you know early on if you're gonna be really fucking awesome.
Porque que no tuvo que bajar de peso o algo con el peso. Yo no,
I'm not
no
sure.
Yo no sé qué pedo, pero según no sé si tuvo que subir o bajar.
Uh-huh.
Pero ese no era su peso de ese güey.
My point is that like.
Son muchos factores, entre ellos el dinero.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'd just be pissed off. I'd be like, Dad, you know, you're a fucking legend, all right? I'm not going to try and be a legend like you are. You know, I'm going to go another route, you know, maybe get into fucking, you know, engineering or computer science, graphic design. I'm fucking around, but, you know, no, it's just like, sí. it's kind of if...
Quiero ser paletero, papá. Pa, pa, hoy quiero ser paletero. Quiero hacer algo con mi vida que sea muy bueno.
Do they live in Mexico?
Or do no they live mames, güey.
Like in Los Angeles or something?
Sí, viven de este lado. Ya nadie vive allá. Ni siquiera Sinaloa, el hell, fucking ni siquiera el Gran Karim.
Yeah, seriously. Trying to live in Sinaloa right now.
¿Quién quiere vivir en México ahorita? Es que creo que en México lo está pasando algo bien pacheco, que es la devaluación cada dos días, güey.
Yeah.
Y depende mucho a cómo se despierte el dólar y qué es lo que diga Trump. Eso afecta mucho a México. Y lo más gacho es de que todo el gobierno se aumenta salarios cada seis meses porque no pueden vivir sin su pinche salario de 3 millones de pesos porque les duele gastar 50 centavos de más, güey.
Ya. Yeah.
Y la gente no tiene para comer. Por eso hace rato te dije, Venezuela va a acabar igual, güey. Ojalá y no. Ojalá y no.
Ya. Yeah.
Chale.
Anyways,
before te dije que nos íbamos a poner a chillar.
Yeah, seriously. Gotta stop drinking for this shit. We just start.
Te pones muy político cuando yeah. tomas, güey.
So, that's, I think we're good here. If anything, maybe talk about.
No, vamos a hablar de Estown, güey.
Estown, yeah, that's true.
Vamos a hablar de Estown.
What a fucking great eres podcast.
Eres una chingonería escuchando podcast. Se nota que tus horas nalgas pagan.
Yeah.
¿Cuántas horas te aventaste sentado escuchando esta?
Shit, ¿toda? Dude, the whole time. I probably did it in like 3 days.
Wow. Yo me la aventé todo en un día.
Dude, it's fucking good, man. It's a great podcast. I guess if you're listening and you haven't seen S-Town, just stop listening because we might talk about some spoilers. But if you haven't seen it, S-Town is about...
un cuate que hace relojes... Que restaura relojes, que eso es un pinche arte, la
it's
neta.
A really
es un arte, güey. La neta, yeah. El hacer de ese tamaño, los engranes, es una mamada.
For
te
sure.
Lo digo como ex trabajador de CNC.
Yeah, it's almost as good as this cabrón. Podcast, so if you sí. have time.
Nada más que ahí dicen groserías en inglés nada más.
Yeah, it's all in English. But no, it's a really fucking like, dense story in a way, because it's about this guy in Woodstock, Alabama. Who basically contacted NPR, the producers at This American Life. He emailed this guy named Brian Reed, and he basically said, hey, there's been a murder here, and there's been some crazy shit happening. It's being covered up by the people here at Woodstock. You need to come investigate. Because
the police, they don't want
to. Yeah, and it's like this guy, he literally has like a super thick Alabaman southern accent.
Yeah.
But he's like a super brilliant genius dude. Yeah. Anyway, so he hits up This American Life, and then this guy, Brian Reed, goes down to Woodstock to investigate this murder. But then the podcast turns into sort of like a profile of this guy who called. His name is John B. McLemore.
Yeah.
And it is basically like, it's like a fucking, that podcast is like a novel, you know, because it's not very clean in its like beginning and end.
Especially
because it takes a lot of like really kind of weird ass turns and dark turns. Let's just talk about it. Again, if you're listening to this and you haven't listened to S-Town, please listen to it. Yeah, stop listening to this because we're going to go into spoilers right now.
You might hate us after this.
Yeah, no, we'll go into spoilers, but basically.
We're going to say what we heard.
Yeah. So basically what happens is Brian Reed is investigating, this NPR dude is investigating this murder that
happened. This town, because this town is covering it up, because and nobody needs to know
it's
about
called,
it.
It's called S Town is a euphemism
for
it's,
shitty
it's,
town.
It's shit town.
Shit
yeah.
town. Yeah.
Shit town. Town. And that's what this guy John calls it. So, long story short, the murder ends up being like just a cheeseman. Basically, it's like a rumor.
Sí.
And this fucking guy John McLemore fucking kills himself and he commits suicide on episode 2, like the end of episode 2.
Oh yeah.
There's
I got chills, dude. I got the chills when that happened. I was like, when they called him, they're like, hey, he just killed himself. Mm-hmm. Dude, I got chills. I was like, what?
Yeah, dude, same here, honestly. I was like, what the fuck? So at the end of there's 7 chapters. At the end of the second chapter, you find out that this guy, John B. McLemore, who called the guy from NPR to come investigate all this shit and fucking commit suicide. And so from there, the podcast turns into like a profile piece about this guy, John, who was like a really interesting, fucking crazy, brilliant, like borderline psychotic like person.
No. He was a clockmaker.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was the best. He was the best of the best.
Yeah.
It was people flying from London to come and see him.
Yeah. So he was like this really badass.
That's how he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The rest of it is just his life.
Yeah.
But that's how he was. And it's pretty that's pretty fucking amazing. Like,
yeah, yeah. And it's dope. It's just such a great story, honestly. Yeah. I was talking to this about my cousin. He mm-hmm. listened to it recently too mm-hmm. and I think that John basically got NPR to come to his town and tell his story, and then he committed suicide once he knew that.
Yeah.
So it was like,
I mean, I know it's because he knew since the beginning, dude,
that the murder didn't happen. The murder is bullshit. Yeah, yeah.
He knew that, uh-huh. and he's like, how can I make my story
exactly
badass?
And
because his story was badass,
it really was.
His house is like, he has money under his fucking house. Yeah.
So
I mean, so that story is dope. I mean, yeah, he knew how to die. Let's put it like that.
Exactly, yeah.
If you're
listening still and you've heard the podcast, I mean, it's so crazy because he basically used to do fire gilding, which requires you to burn mercury. And what the podcast basically kind of hypothesizes is that he had mercury poisoning.
Well, yeah, mercury poisoning.
And that makes you go crazy over a period of time. And he used to do, like, fucking burn.
Pero no hacía eso porque ese güey usaba otro método, güey. Para hacer el oro, para convertir todo como que se viera en oro. Mm-hmm. Ese güey usaba otro método, no usaba mercurio.
Yeah.
Usaba otros químicos. Por un rato sí estuvo usando, pero ya después se clavó en cómo cambiar eso y ya empezó a usar el otro pedo. Por eso también es así de chale, pobrecito.
Yeah.
Y ese señor sabía que tranza.
Yeah,
he was woke.
He really was. He was woke, but he in his own sort of like crazy problematic way, because he was from Alabama. His.
Pero es que no es un problema ser gay, güey.
It is if you're fucking living in Woodstock, Alabama. No, I know it's not, and it's not a fucking problem. But I think what's really fascinating about his story was that he was living in a part of a country mm-hmm. in Alabama where you cannot be gay. You know, it's mm-hmm. like it's like a fucking sin. And so he was this brilliant mm-hmm. fucking dude who was quite the way he says it. He literally says he's quote 60% homosexual, mm-hmm. which is like a really hilarious way.
El otro por 40% qué es, güey. Pero ¿y de ese cuánto por ciento?
The point is, like, he was kind of like grappling with a lot of his own personal issues because he was like, you know, like this really brilliant person living amongst idiots, you know. And I'm not; those are kind of his words. And so he was, I think he was like 45 when he killed himself.
Mm.
So he was kind of like middle aged when you hear him. But a few of my friends were basically saying that the ending was like kind of weak.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, es que ya cuando no tienes al actor principal, ¿cómo acabas algo bien chido, güey?
Mm-hmm.
No mames, eso es imposible.
So to my understanding and our theory, or our running theory, is that John B. McLemore, mm-hmm. he was always going to commit suicide. Mm-hmm. All of the people that they interviewed, they all acknowledged that he had always talked about killing himself. And so he got to a point in his life where he's like, all right, I'm ready to fucking kill myself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to fucking coerce an NPR team to come here and tell my motherfucking badass story. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that there's gold buried
which
on my property.
Which it is.
It may be or maybe not, dude. Like, I feel like he was such a smart dude that he would
He had coins, though.
Yeah, but I think he basically used that more so as like a way of getting people to keep looking and mm-hmm. shit, as opposed to if it's actually there, you know, because he was such a smart dude, and he basically was like really attracted to the literary, you know, mm-hmm.
True.
He was like, he knew he was like this really brilliant person, mm-hmm. and you know, he had his like a shitload of issues. But, you know, he fucking, the running theory, like I'm saying, is I think that he knew that he was ready to fucking die. And so he was like, yo, NPR, there's a murder here, but also I'm here and I'm a fucking genius and I'm a fucking badass.
I can't show you how I'm a genius.
Yeah. And the fucking thing just takes so many goddamn weird turns, like everything from him being like gay to him being like a masochist.
No, since the murder stopped, the murder case, that's when everything started turning into like fucking
Everything from him, you know, being like gay or queer, as he
he calls himself
queer, to like him being a masochist. He literally fucking had that dude Jason, or was it Jake? Jake Goodson. He had dude, that dude Jake basically pierce. He would pierce his nipples and like give him tattoos. He would whip him like with.
Con ramas, güey. Con ramas. Y luego, después de que eso, lo tatuaban encima de las...
What a fucking crazy bastard,
es que
dude.
El cerebro te hace llegar a que cuando te gusta el dolor y te empieza a gustar el dolor, quieres más dolor, güey.
Yeah, yeah.
Y eso está
I
bien
mean, that was his way. That sí. was his way of dealing with all of the bullshit that he kind of grappled with on mm-hmm. a daily basis, living in a place in like Woodstock, like, Alabama. Yeah. And, yeah, it's... I was... super fucking in love with that shit, man. I fucking, it's a really good well-made podcast. And mm-hmm. I think what's also really interesting and fascinating about that podcast was the contrast between John Blee McLemore and Brian Reed, two polar opposites. One, like this guy from the South, this red part of like a very sort of quote-unquote redneck culture, and fucking Brian Reed's liberal ass from NPR. Just them together is so funny. Like, one of my favorite parts was like, it's towards the beginning. And,
oh, cuando voy llegando.
Yeah, and he's like, because Brian Reed is like, he thinks he's going to investigate this murder, right? So he's like, he's talking to John, and he says, he's like, what am I going to tell? Like, I want to keep a low yeah. profile. So what am I going to tell the people? Like, if
are here,
like, what? I'm this guy Who from New York. I? Who am I? And the dude, John's like, oh, well, everybody here thinks I'm gay anyway. So I'll just say I'm sucking your damn dick. You know, this guy, like, he's super brilliant and hilarious, but he's also super fucking vulgar, yeah. which is right up my alley. You know, I fucking love shit like that.
Cuando empecé, se me quedé, yeah, está chido. Yeah. Ya sé por qué le gustó ese güey.
Yeah, dude. And so, yeah, it's it was a great podcast, and I think it really raised the bar in terms of kind of like podcast and storytelling. I think it'll be hard to match something like that because
I mean, no.
I think the argument that it is has a weak ending, or that it kind of tied a nice bow around the whole story. Mm. I think is valid, and I think it's, yeah. but at the same time, like it to me, it was more like a novel as opposed to like this like yeah, investigative has, yeah, has, like report on yeah. you know, a murder or something. And it was like this really tragic figure. John yeah. B. McLemore was super fucking in his head. He was like suicidal and depressed yeah. as fuck, but he was also really fucking hilarious and really fucking smart.
What it was weird is like. Nah, es que toda la historia está chida. Cuando se empezó a robar, cuando falleció ese, bueno, no falleció, cuando se suicidó ese güey.
Yeah, he drank cyanide, which is yeah, fucking crazy.
And he was calling this person from...
The town clerk, the town clerk, yeah.
Para que no pensara que lo habían matado a alguien más. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Que eso también está bien.
Yeah,
acá.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The whole thing was very calculated. And I think he was, at the end of his, he had reached a point where he was like, you know, I've lived my fucking life.
Fuck this shit.
I'm fucking depressed. I'm gonna fucking kill myself. So I'm gonna get NPR to tell my story. If anybody has watched this and is still listening to this and they have a counter argument or counter theory, I'd love to hear it.
Yo les digo dónde vive para que le vayan a pegar a Samuel.
Shit. All right. Well, I think we reached a good point. Do you are you hungry at all, man? Do you want like a
pase pedazo de
pizza,
slice
of pizza at all?
Sí, por favor.
Here,
gracias.
I got this.
Y la catsup.
All right. Yeah, I'll get it for you over there.
Por favor.
All right, so this has been another episode of Maleducados. Thank you for joining us. It's been a good episode here, we think. Be sure to... I'm just going to do the plugs real quick. This episode was sponsored by Desmadre.com. Be sure to check out our Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. Be sure to follow us, subscribe, and like and share. This piece of content, it goes a long way. You can find Maleducados on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and YouTube. So you can find us there. Be sure to please subscribe and like. All that bullshit. Y'all know how to do this shit. Also, check out the Desmadre Patreon page at patreon.com/desmadre. That is a way to help the efforts here at Desmadre directly. We'd really appreciate it. And there's also some shit on our store that is on sale that you can pick up. Some El Mundo and Desmadre t-shirts. Some old Masa and the Power shit. Check it out at desmadre.com/store. We will see y'all on the next one. Cuídense, lávenselo. Anything else they should do, Luis?
Hagan gárgaras con el agua.
And brush your motherfucking teeth. We'll see y'all next time. Corte.